This is Taking Aim with
Ralph Schoenman
and Maya Schoen. Our program today, The Collapse of Bear Stearns and the Crisis of Fictive Capital, Part 2, The Specter of Systemic Collapse. If the Fed, referring to the Federal Reserve, had not stepped in, we would have had pandemonium, said James Melcher, president of the New York hedge fund Balestra Capital. There was the risk of a total meltdown at the beginning of last week. I don't think most people have any idea how bad this chain could have been, and I'm not sure the Fed can maintain the solvency of the U.S. banking system. Melcher was not alone. I spent 35 years on Wall Street, said David Jones, chief economist at DMJ Advisors and a former Wall Street economist. He's been a Fed watcher for a long time, and he said, I have never seen the potential of a more severe credit crisis than this one. What did the Federal Reserve do that has brought praise from Wall Street and an increase in the stock market? Last week, the Fed engineered the fire sale of bankruptcy-headed Bear Stearns companies to J.P. Morgan Chase & Company. It arranged the sale for $2 a share. That's $236 million for a company whose stock was worth $170 a share 1 year ago. But that wasn't all the Fed did. The Fed also agreed to cover the worst securities held by Bear Stearns and Company with a $30 billion cover so that J.P. Morgan Chase wouldn't be responsible for those, quote, toxic assets. It also offered emergency loans to other securities dealers under the terms normally reserved for regulated banks. That is, it was offering these emergency loans to investment banks such as Bear Stearns that aren't regulated by the Fed. It slashed a key short-term interest rate by 0.75 percentage point to 2.25%. The cut was the sixth since September and the largest that had been made in years. These three steps followed moves to lend $100 billion in cash to banks and $200 billion in treasury bonds to cash-strapped investment banks. The goal was to keep the financial system from seizing up, that is, to maintain the capitalist infrastructure. Ralph?
I don't think it's possible to state more clearly or more emphatically the essential and inescapable reality of the terminal crisis of late capitalism. I didn't think it would be possible to read in the pages of the Wall Street Journal and the Financial Times and the Sunday Telegraph and the Washington Post and New York Times articles with headlines that talk about, as you've just cited, a total meltdown, the insolvency of the U.S. banking system. Now, you were citing James Melcher, president of a major New York hedge fund, Balestra Capital, one of those behind-the-scenes manipulators and controllers of the speculative paper-shuffling fictive capital that we have been describing for 7 years on Taking Aim. This article that you cited, Maya, and the Sunday Telegraph, the Sunday Telegraph, brothers and sisters, is an extraordinarily conservative, far-right daily and Sunday newspaper in Great Britain. I have a whole history with that during my 10 years in Great Britain. I should just mention parenthetically that when I was finally deported from the UK, it was by virtue of the Telegraph's links to MI5 and MI6 that the cops got me. But let's go on to what the Sunday Telegraph, of all people, is saying. We may never know for sure whether the Federal Reserve's quote-unquote rescue of Bear Stearns averted a seizure of the $516 trillion derivative system, the ultimate Chernobyl for global finance. seizure of $516 trillion of derivatives, $516 trillion, 500,000, a half million dollars a minute since the birth of Jesus? Here's what James Melcher states. We have been worried for a very long time. There was nobody to pay on the other side of these contracts. We were taking our profits early and getting out of everything. These Greenspan policies that led to this are the most irresponsible episode the world has ever seen.
Ralph, he's referring to the policies of former Fed Chair Alan Greenspan, because the issue of subprime mortgages had come up before the Fed in prior years. And Alan Greenspan took the position that the banks and the investment banks did not need further regulation and that the market would correct itself. Well, we see what we saw recently what happened with this correction. In other words, a meltdown. Last week when the Federal Reserve met, Ben Bernanke, the new Federal Reserve chair, resorted to what the Telegraph calls the nuclear option. He invoked the Depression-era clause, Article 13 of the Federal Reserve Act, that is to be used in, quote, unusual and exigent circumstances. That's the way it's worded in the Federal Reserve Act. And that's when the Federal Reserve stepped in to bail out Bear Stearns. And it's not just Bear Stearns. It's bail out the financial markets because none of the capital sources were willing to lend to banks and to investment houses such as Bear Stearns. And so they were all having to write down billions and hundreds of billions of dollars in total of these bad securities that they had been offering.
Yes, Maya, but you see the Fed Chairman Ben Bernanke move with what they call breathtaking speed. He violated all the norms and, in fact, the rules. He invoked some obscure Depression-era marginal clause to warrant his intervention on this scale, which is not, in fact, legal. But they did this because the nuclear option, as you call it, the Depression-era clause, which is Article 13, Subsection 3 of the Federal Reserve Act, to be used, as you say, only in the most exigent circumstances, in their mind was essential to prevent the total and generalized spreading and uncontainable collapse of the capitalist economy on a global scale. Listen to this. Bear Stearns had total positions of $13.4 trillion. That's greater than the United States' national income. That's equal to a quarter of the world's GDP. That's $13.4 trillion of the positions of derivatives staked out by Bear Stearns. And the contracts that gave them positions for $13.4 trillion were described as swaps, swaptions, caps, collars, floors, what they call a heady edifice of newfangled instruments built on an asset base of $80 billion at best. That's a tiny fraction. It's something like 2% of what they call the notional level. The Bank for International Settlements used the concept of gross market value to weight the real exposure. They calculated that they had 2% of hard assets for these positions of $13.4 trillion. Brothers and sisters, this is a house of cards based upon fictive capital that has no grounding in any reality other than the extraordinary, reckless, off the balance sheets, off the books, orgy of enrichment, while the real economy in which people live, and you have 2 billion people at a dollar a day starving and immiserated across the planet, not to mention what we will be discussing this program, the deepening crisis for the working class in the United States in terms of daily survival, while this orgy of enrichment occurs, it's based upon nothing. Nothing in the form of real collateral positions to justify these derived contracts of speculation of trillions upon trillions of dollars. Of course this house of cards has to collapse. 20 years ago, said William Sells, the credit specialist at Dresdner Kleinwort, 20 years ago, the Fed would have let Bear Stearns go bust. Now it's too interlinked to fail. Banks and brokers and hedge funds are linked in a destiny, I'm quoting from this article, of a nexus of interlocking claims. It's a counterparty spaghetti. To make matter worse, Lehman Brothers, Union Bank Suisse, and Citigroup were all wobbling on the back foot as the hurricane hit. The International Swaps and Derivatives Association said the vast headline figures in these contracts are meaningless. Positions are offsetting. The Bank for International Settlements calculates that the 2% notional level, removing the possibility of gauging the market risk, has projected a crisis of untold proportions. We don't know what happens in a crisis like this. We don't know. Nobody does. J.P. Morgan is going to take over Bear Stearns' $13.4 trillion contracts, lock, stock, and barrel. But get this. The article here in the Sunday Telegraph states, J.P. Morgan is itself already up to its neck in this soup, with $77 trillion of speculative contracts of its own. Now it's going to have $90 trillion of speculative contracts on its books, one-sixth of the global market. J.P. Morgan is positioning itself, thanks to the Fed, in just as precarious a position as Bear Stearns itself. This is a crisis uncontained. The hype, the nonsense, the momentary spike in the stock market, which then collapses 400 points the day after, is a measure of the instability of this system. This crisis is generating a unstoppable process of decomposition on a global scale.
And Ralph, we have to note here that it's the Federal Reserve that stepped in, the Federal Reserve which deals with banks, when in fact Bear Stearns, with the minimal regulation that it has, is regulated by the Securities and Exchange Commission, which took the back seat, which didn't do anything. It was the Federal Reserve which, you can say, manufactures money in the United States. It's the Federal Reserve Bank that stepped in. At key to all this, and as the Telegraph says, the most neuralgic niche is the $45 trillion market for credit default swaps, known as CDS. These CDS swaps are a way of betting on the credit quality of companies without having to buy the underlying bonds, and bonds are called fixed interest securities, which are less liquid. In other words, the bonds are not liquid. So what's happened is they've created this instrument called a credit default swap, which is like an insurance policy. And the problem is seen that there are 10 banks, 10 investment banks, Bear Stearns being the largest, that make up 89% of these contracts. So you have 10 banks throughout the world that are dealing with 90% of this $45 trillion market for this fictive capital. And we'll discuss later more about these credit default swaps because it is alarming what has been happening with these, what you could say, insurance policies of whether or not a company is going to make good on its bonds.
Well, Maya, one of the things that the Fed chief, the New York Fed chief, Timothy Geithner, admitted, and he said it alarmed him, was that 10 banks made up almost 90% of the contracts, as you indicate. So this is what these people are admitting. As these credit default swaps spread, measuring default risk on Bear Stearns' debt rocketed from 246 to 792 in a single day. And it led to the rumor that the broker was preparing to invoke bankruptcy protection, which would have meant that everything would have gone down the tubes. Now, in the old days, it was hard for speculators to take what they called short bets on bonds. It's the credit derivatives that opened up this whole bonanza. But the consequence, here's what James Batterman, a derivatives expert at Fitch Ratings in New York, said. The CDS swaps can be used for speculation, and that's what causes the skittish markets to overshoot. But now the meltdown panic has taken hold. And the hottest document flying around the city was a paper by Barclays Bank, Barclays Capital, probing what would happen in a counterparty default. And as the Telegraph said, this is not for bedtime reading. Direct losses from a CDS breakdown alone would be $80 billion, but the potential risks are far greater. So what you've got here is the default of the counterparty trading the derivatives, which will generalize to all those banks, those 10 banks that hold 90% of all of this. This, quote, gap risk, the article continues, is the stuff of trading nightmares. Vast fortunes vanish in a moment. One side would be trapped with staggering losses on their books, but the winners are unable to collect a prize because of the insolvent banks in the middle. It would take years to unravel all the claims in court, and by then, the financial landscape of the world would be a scene of carnage. Here is Warren Buffett's description of derivatives. He called them a weapon of mass financial destruction. And the article states the analogy is that the Allied troops never found the alleged weapons in Iraq. This time, Washington's preemptive shock and awe was brought into play. But will it be enough? And the answer, obviously, from everything we've seen in this article and what we'll be quoting to you from other major articles in the established press, the answer is indisputably no.
And if you feel confused about what is going on when you hear on the news about or hear on Taking Aim about credit default swaps or CDOs, collateralized debt obligations, remember you are not alone. The top bankers and the top government officials don't understand what is happening either. They only understand the generalized principle such that these are debt instruments that are, in a way, insurance policies to hedge on a bet about whether or not a bond, there will be a default by a company on a bond. But the actual instrument, the CDO and the CDS, it's far removed from the original asset base. The credit default swap is like an insurance policy that can be used by the debt owner to hedge, that is, to insure against a credit event, such as a default on a debt obligation. For instance, if General Motors issues a bond and yet it finds it cannot pay that bond at the price at which it said it was going to do. So what happens then is that a company is taking out a little security policy. In other words, it is transferring the fact that it holds this bond to the person with whom it is swapping. The person is swapping is providing the security, the saying they will make good on that bond, and that's why it's called a swap.
Listen, Maya, what you're saying right now is echoed very beautifully in New York Times article March 19th by Dave Leonhardt, and the article is called Can't Grasp the Credit Crisis? Join the club. Raise your hand if you don't quite understand this whole financial crisis. It's been going on for 7 months, and most people feel they should understand it, but they don't. Now, he goes on to state the following. I urge you not to feel sheepish. This may not be entirely comforting, but your confusion is shared by people in the middle of the crisis. We're exposing, this is a quote now from Ethan Harris, the top Lehman Brothers economist. We're exposing parts of the capital markets that most of us had never heard of. This is what Robert Rubin, the former Treasury Secretary of Clinton and the current Citigroup executive, and Citigroup is itself on the verge of collapse, the current Citigroup executive stated he had never even heard of the liquidity puts, an obscure kind of financial contract, until they started creating critical problems for Citigroup. I spent a good part of the day, the article author says, calling people on Wall Street and the government to ask one question. Can you please try to explain this to me? When they finished, I had a highly sophisticated follow-up question. Can you try again? This is the article, the lead article in the New York Times. The capitalist captains of capital themselves have been kept in the dark about this handful of speculators who are controlling the derivatives market and extrapolating from this paper shuffling to investment upon investment based on no collateral base that is so obscure that nobody knows what the hell's going on, other than that they're trading fictive capital, paper shuffling that has no real basis in any value that can be measured.
Well, Ralph, there is a collateral base, except that what the instrument that they've created is far removed from that collateral base, and then they start trading, you know, like as if they were had playing cards. But when you had your baseball playing cards, you did have a card in your hand, and that's not what is happening here. As I said, they are far removed from the actual collateral. And what happens with mortgages in particular is that there is a ganging up. There's a combination of all these mortgages, which government agencies like Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac have been doing for years, although they would make sure that they were only giving it to what they called good mortgages. But here you had the investment banks taking any mortgage, and some of these were with zero down, and as the economy, as people lost their jobs, and as interest rates rose after their adjustable rates increased and they couldn't make their mortgage payments, you had ganged up mortgages with the bulk of the mortgages failing. And so these instruments were worthless. And that's what happened. So if you look at this incredible chart that appeared in the San Francisco Chronicle last Tuesday, bearing down on a bailout, investment bank Bear Stearns Companies had completed an emergency deal to be bought by J.P. Morgan Chase. And then what it does in this incredible chart is it goes through what took place at Bear Stearns starting last June. Because last June, on June 14th, Bear Stearns reported its quarterly earnings down by 10%. And Merrill Lynch, which had lent money to Bear Stearns, seized the collateral from a Bear Stearns hedge fund. And Bear Stearns then had to commit $3.2 billion in secured loans to bail out its high-grade structured credit fund. But that was only the beginning, because on July 17th, Bear Stearns had to tell its clients that one of the troubled funds was essentially worthless, and that the other fund was only worth 9% of its value. In August, these two Bear Stearns hedge funds filed for bankruptcy. And by September, Bear Stearns had reported a 68% drop in quarterly income. November, it wrote down $1.62 billion of on its credit books, and then said that it had a fourth quarter loss. By December, the chief executive officer, James Kane, said that he was going to skip his own 2007 bonus. Wasn't that nice of him? And by January 7th, he retired from the firm and stepped down. Ralph?
I merge thinking that all this uncertainty has created a panic. The crisis isn't close to ending either. This is the New York Times. Ben Bernanke, the Federal Reserve Chairman, won't be able to wave a magic wand and make everything better, no matter how many times he cuts rates. It really started in 1998, when large numbers of people decided that real estate, which hadn't recovered from the 1990s slump, had become a bargain. Wall Street was making it easier for buyers to get loans. It transformed the mortgage business from a local one centered around banks to a global one in which investors from anywhere could pool money to lend. As is often the case with innovations, it was soon too much of a good thing. Yeah, a good thing for who? These same global investors, flush with cash from Asia's speculative boom and from rising oil prices, demanded high returns. Wall Street came up with an answer: subprime mortgages. Now, these were disguised rate mortgages. They were basically a con. because people who couldn't afford it were induced to take subprime or virtually no interest mortgages with a sleeper clause.
Ralph, there was no down payment and low interest where there was going to be an adjustable rate in a couple of years.
Yes, Maya, I was leading to that, but in many instances, they were no interest loans. And the kicker, as you said, was that within a year or at most 2 years, it was on a sliding scale so that interest rates could double, triple, quadruple, go up by 10 times. And the homeowner was absolutely stuck with the debt, which would quickly outstrip the value of the property in the first place. And then these same bogus con man mortgages were sliced into pieces and bundled into investments known as collateralized debt obligations or CDOs. And then they, once bundled into different types of mortgages, they were sold to different groups of investors. Then the investors, to quote the New York Times, goosed their returns through leverage, the oldest strategy going. They made $100 million bets with $1 million of their own money and $99 million of debt. If the value of the investment rose from 100 to 101 million, the investors doubled their money. The Fed under Greenspan made it all possible, sharply reducing interest rates to prevent a double dip recession. And of course, knowing all the time that this was a complete bonanza for the short-term speculators and a catastrophe for the victim working-class homeowners. Quote, all these investments were, of course, highly risky. The returns came with huge risk. And then he says, Greenspan, Bernanke, and the top executives of every Wall Street firm decided that the usual rules didn't apply. Based on their ideas, prices rose higher, so high that they were destined to fall, and it was a self-defeating prophecy. The mortgage mess had huge ripple effects. The American home, which was presented as a sure bet, such that a huge portion of the global financial system ended up owning a piece of it, soon collapsed. And they were hoping, against hope, that the crisis wouldn't spread to traditional banks. This is the New York Times. Like Citibank, because they had sold off the underlying mortgages to investors. But it turned out that the banks had also sold their insurance policies on the mortgage debt, which left them on the hook when homeowners who had taken out a wishful mortgage could no longer get out of it by flipping the house for a profit. So the highly leveraged investments based on paper became hugely magnified, and that $100 million investment based on $1 million of value now turned into its opposite, and all of the big brokerage houses and the financial groups, the Carlyle groups that created hedge funds associated with this collapsed. Carlyle Group collapsed in 1 week, quote.
Carlyle Capital.
Well, Maya, I'm quoting from the New York Times. The Carlyle Group that's involved is the investor of Carlyle in these hedge instruments. Quote, if anything goes awry, these dominoes fall very fast, said Charles Morris, the banker who tells the story of the crisis in a new book, The Trillion Dollar Meltdown. And the article continues, this toxic combination of bad investments has shocked Wall Street into a state. The soundness of any investment firm depends on firms having confidence that real assets stand behind its bets. So the consequence of which is a double whammy. The investors are demanding their money back. The lenders are shutting the door in their face. Goodbye, Bear Stearns. And how does this article conclude? Bubbles lead to busts. Busts lead to panics. Panics lead to long, deep economic turndowns. You say, my goodness, how did the subprime mortgage loans take out the entire global financial system? That's how. Quote unquote, New York Times.
This is Taking Aim with
Ralph Schoenman
and Maya Schoen. Our program today, The Collapse of Bear Stearns and the Crisis of Fictive Capital, Part 2, The Specter of Systemic Collapse. Ralph?
Maya, I suggest that we continue and deepen this critique of the systemic nature of the crisis and perhaps deal with the impact on working class people and families in the following show, unless you want to, I leave it to you. Here's the New York Times, March 23rd. What created this monster? Nelson Schwartz and Julie Cresswell. It states that the Federal Reserve has taken an action unprecedented since the Great Depression, lending money directly to major investing banks and putting taxpayers on the hook for billions of dollars in questionable trades. It says, as manager of the world's biggest bond fund and custodian of nearly $1 trillion in assets, Bill Gross has amassed a cash hoard of $50 billion in case trading partners, and suddenly there was demanding payment. There was a demand for payment from his firm, PIMCO. And they had crisis meetings in a war room in PIMCO's headquarters in Newport Beach, California. Quote, to make sure the ARC didn't have leaks, speaking of his own, we came in every day at 3:30 a.m. and left at 6 p.m. I set the alarm at 2:45 a.m. These are extraordinary times. And the key to this is the following. The investment community has morphed, and this is a quote now, into something beyond banks, beyond regulation. It's the shadow banking system, that private trading of complex instruments that lurk in the financial shadows, that terrifies regulators in Wall Street, that has created stresses in the economy. Economic downturns and panics occur and have taken place before, but few have posed so serious a threat to the entire financial system that regulators have responded as if they were confronting a potential epidemic. As Congress and Republican and Democratic presidential administrations push for financial deregulation over the last decade, now bear in mind what they're stating here. The Republican and Democratic presidential administrations in Congress together were pushing for this financial deregulation, and the biggest banks and brokerage firms thereby created this dizzying array of speculative products that, quote, experts acknowledge are hard to understand and even harder to value. Of course, on Wall Street, what you don't see can hurt you. In the past decade, this explosion in complex derivative instruments, collateralized debt obligations, and credit default swaps has created an uncontrollable crisis. These products are virtually hidden from investors, analysts, and regulators, even though they have emerged as one of Wall Street's most outside profit engines. They don't trade openly on public exchanges, and financial services firms disclose few details. These derivatives, when greed and the urge to gamble with borrowed money overtakes sensible risk-taking, these derivatives have become Wall Street's version of nitroglycerin. Nitroglycerin, says the New York Times, blowing up the capitalist economy. Maya?
Yes, they call it a shadow banking system. A shadow banking system, but I think we have to stress, Ralph, that this is something that has been pushed by both Democratic and Republican Party legislators, and that the deregulation of these investment banks took place under President Bill Clinton. And now people are saying, is this because legislators are funded by Wall Street, financiers by the large banking institutions? And if you look at, for instance, Barack Obama, he has major funding from Wall Street, just like Hillary Clinton.
Well, all of these, I'm sorry, to emphasize the point you made, all of the major houses that we're talking about here have been the major contributors to Barack Obama and to Hillary Clinton alike. I'm sorry, go ahead, please.
So the shadow banking system, as Ralph said, creates these instruments that are developed by mathematicians, physicists, by people who are not your normal bankers, because what they're doing is creating vast econometric mathematical models that are deriving value from a small base of collateral. And the instruments, the products, are virtually hidden. from the analysts and the regulators. And Wall Street's most outside profit engines are from these new security instruments, these derivatives. They don't trade openly on any public exchange like the stock market, where you could read in the newspaper what the value is on one day or the next. And the financial services firms, such as Bear Stearns, disclose few details about them. Now, the banks themselves, like J.P. Morgan Chase or Citigroup, felt, how can we compete with these investment firms? After all, we're regulated. We have to disclose on the books what happens with the mortgages that we give to borrowers and the other financial instruments that we have, such as CD, certificates of deposits. So the banks themselves set up other off-book instruments. And as a result, Citigroup last year ended up writing down $20 billion. And that's why Charles Prince III was forced to resign as the head of Citigroup. Again, these were banking instruments. $30 billion is an awful lot to write down from your book. Bad loans, bad group. Billions of dollars of potential liabilities. And at the time that Charles Prince was forced to resign as the chief executive of Citigroup, he met with Representative Barney Frank, the chairman of the House Financial Services Committee. And according to the New York Times, in this article Ralph was talking about what created this monster by Nelson Schwartz and Julie Creswell that appeared on March 23rd, among the topics they discussed were these investment vehicles that allowed Citigroup and the other banks to keep billions of dollars in potential liabilities off their balance sheets and away from the scrutiny of investors and analysts. Why aren't they on the balance sheet? Asked Mr. Frank, the Democrat from Massachusetts. And the Times says, the congressman recalled that Mr. Prince said doing so would have put Citigroup at a disadvantage with Wall Street investment banks that were more loosely regulated and were allowed to take greater risks. It was at this moment, Mr. Frank says, that he first realized just how much freedom the Wall Street firms had. Well, this is a bit unlikely since Barney Frank has been in Congress a long time, and he was there during the time when the Commodity Futures Trading Commission existed. And it still exists, and had to deal with the long-term capital debacle in 1998 when the Federal Reserve Bank of New York stepped in to prevent this major hedge fund that had been set up by two Nobel Prize laureate economists had been set up and was dealing with just these things, derivatives that were going to make, that had made a profit on a small difference between the value of bonds. And Barney Frank was there during the Clinton administration when, in the fall of 2000, the lame duck session of Congress passed the legislation called the Commodity Futures Modernization Act, the bill that effectively kept, according to the New York Times, much of the market for derivatives and other exotic instruments off limits to the regulatory agencies that handle the more, that oversee the more conventional assets like stocks, bonds, and the futures contracts.
Well, Maya, that's why in the New York Times, in this important piece, it says, in fact, while the home loans to risky borrowers were among the first to go bad, the crisis did not stem from the housing market alone, and it certainly won't end there. Quote, the problem has been spreading its wings and taking in markets very far afield from mortgages, admitted Alan S. Blinder, the former vice chairman of the Federal Reserve and now an economics professor at Princeton. Quote, it's a failure at a lot of levels. It's hard to find a piece of this system that actually worked in the lead up to the bust. So, there's no way to quantify the magnitude of this deception and the consequences thereof.
Ralph, it's so disingenuous for people like Alan Blinder, who was the head of the Fed, or Barney Frank, or any of these people to start saying, how did this come about? We have been talking about speculative capital and the problem that derivatives would cause for 10 years at least. This is not new. It was inevitable, and it has expanded, and it would expand because it is all under the table, and there are so many profits, so much profit that has been made over the years. They have created billionaires of these financiers.
Well, Maya, I want to mention that we're going to come to this and to examine it, because it's very important to understand the role of J.P. Morgan Chase in this bailout, so-called, of Bear Stearns. It's J.P. Morgan Chase that was also playing a similar and analogous role in 1929, and even before then, in the Great Panic of 1907, the speculative bubble. Exactly, it wasn't with derivatives, but it was the same kind of shell game in which investors and small investors were induced to buy stock in a completely fake enterprise, and the bubble burst, and a huge financial generalized collapse occurred, and John Pierpont Morgan was called in to put cash in to bail out the various collapsing institutions for the short term. Yet here is Chief Executive J.P. Morgan, James Dimon, who has been brought in to pick up Bear Stearns at a fire sale price, and he says, "We have a terribly global world, and financial regulation is not kept up. I cannot even describe the seriousness. I always talk about how bad things can happen that you can't expect, but I never fathomed this event." Oh, really? 2 months before he resigned as the chief executive of Citigroup last year amid a write-down of $20 billion, Charles O. Prince III sat down with the same Barney Frank. What did they discuss? What were the investment vehicles that allowed Citigroup and other banks to keep billions of dollars in potential liabilities off their balance sheets and away from the scrutiny of investors and analysts? Why aren't they on the balance sheet? Well, as you indicated, Maya, the reason is that they knew they were there, but they were concealing that they weren't. In other words, they knew that the operation was occurring, but it was off the actual formal balance sheets. Everybody winking and blinking an eye as they proceeded to speculate at the expense of small people who were conned into this. During the late 1990s, Wall Street fought bitterly against any attempt to regulate the emerging derivatives market. The article continues. So these people knew exactly what was going on. There were outright resistances to any attempt to find out what was going on or control it. Michael Greenberger, the senior regulator of the Commodity Futures Trading Commission, acknowledged this. The long-term capital debacle in 1998 did alert regulators to the dangers of the big bets with borrowed money, but nothing was done about it. After that, all was forgotten, said Greenberger, now a professor at the University of Maryland. At the same time, the derivatives were being praised as the boon that would make the economy more stable, Republicans and Democrats alike signing on for it. That's the legacy of the Clinton administration. That's the record of the Democratic Party, and that's the posture of all of their nominal candidates, because they're funded by the same folks, and whatever their populist rhetoric, they're going to carry on the same policies till the system collapses around their ears.
Ralph, we should make clear that the betting, this big stakes betting, is going on by the super rich and by the investment managers of the pension funds and other large mutual funds, pension, you know, the large financial managers. Because to be a hedge, to be involved in a hedge fund, which is basically a partnership of the very rich, the very wealthy, you have to have hundreds of thousands of dollars of assets to just buy into that hedge fund. So what we have is the large financial houses, and even CalPERS, which manages the pension fund in California, public sector workers. These are major, major investment holdings, and they are playing this big stakes gambling. It's like being the big stakes gamblers in Las Vegas who get special treatment and they have their own special games. Well, that's what we had going on here in Wall Street, a real round table of the super rich who are impacting on the rest of us in society.
Well, guess what, Maya? In the fall of 2000, at the end of Clinton's term, Congress passed a notice piece of legislation called the Commodities Futures Modernization Act, which kept the market for derivatives and other exotic instruments off limit to agencies that regulate more conventional stocks and bonds. So, as you were indicating, it's a con. Phil Graham, a Republican senator from Texas and chairman of the Senate Banking Committee, guess what he's doing now? He's the vice chairman of Union Bank Suisse, the Swiss investment banking giant. He was unavailable for comment because his fortunes were hammered by the very derivative investments. He was nominally supposed to be overseeing this as chair of the Senate Banking Committee. Then he's administering it. What does he say? The comment of Greenberger, I don't believe anybody understood the significance of this. They didn't. The audacity, the brass audacity, I won't say the part of the anatomy that this is, the audacity of these liars. The article, regardless with profit margins shrinking in traditional businesses like underwriting and trading, Wall Street firms rushed into the lucrative financial products like derivatives. Students with doctorates in physics and other mathematical disciplines were hired directly out of graduate school to design them. Wall Street firms made huge bets on derivatives. This is the record. Maya.
Ralph, 3 years ago, according to the New York Times, Wall Street's, quote, best and brightest gather to assess the landscape of financial risk. Top executives from firms like Goldman Sachs, Lehman Brothers, and Citigroup, calling themselves the Counterparty Risk Management Policy Group II, debated the likelihood of an event that could send a seismic wave across financial markets. This is like having the bear guard the honey. The group's conclusion, detailed in a 153-page report, was that the chances of a seismic upheaval had declined sharply since the long-term capital bailout. The members recommended some nips and tucks around the market edges to ensure that trades were cleared and settled more efficiently. They also recommended that secret hedge funds volunteer more information about their activities. Yet overall, they concluded that financial markets were more stable than they had been just a few years earlier, end quote. Well, that's because, as the Wall Street Journal notes, the banks were all fat and happy, and they were posting record profits and had healthy capital cushions, that money flowed easily. And why? None of these people were actually looking at what was the actual basis, the actual collateral basis, the assets upon which their heavy lifting derivatives, their fake speculative instruments, were based. If they had looked at the basis of these subprime mortgages upon which they had created these security instruments, they would have seen that people would not be able to afford to pay their mortgages. If they had looked at what was happening in the economy, they would have seen that the auto companies were laying off people, that they were forcing them into retirement packages instead of working so that they wouldn't have to pay their health benefits and they wouldn't have to have further production. They would be looking at the economy, but they don't. They look at their paper shuffling profits and the huge bonuses that they were reaping at the end of the year for trading on these instruments.
Yes, here's how it works, brothers and sisters. Mr. Blinder, the former Fed vice chairman, holds a doctorate in economics from MIT. He stated, "I only had a modest understanding of complex derivatives." Now, Warren Buffett, the legendary investor and chairman of Berkshire Hathaway, said, "These derivatives are weapons of mass destruction." This is a quote, again from the New York Times. What was going on behind the scenes? Timothy Geithner, the career civil servant, became president of the New York Fed in 2003. As Fed president, he purportedly be trying to get a handle on the hedge fund activities and the use of leverage on Wall Street. He zeroed in on the credit derivatives market, the New York Times tells us. Secretly, he brought together leaders of Wall Street firms in a series of meetings in 2005 and 2006 to discuss credit derivatives. And he pushed many of them to settle derivatives trading electronically, hoping to eliminate the paper backlog. Geithner, quote, had one hand tied behind his back. While the Fed regulated the commercial banks like Citigroup and J.P. Morgan, in fact, it had absolutely no control over the investment banks, the hedge funds, and the participants in the burgeoning derivatives market. And the industry fought all attempts with politicians from both parties to surface or regulate any of the products of the lucrative business overseas. And as the managing director of Institutional Risk Analytics, Christopher Whalen, put it, speaking of Geithner and the Fed, I don't think he's enough of a real practitioner to go mano a mano with these bankers. So you've got here a system with its political hired hands, that Millionaires Club in Washington, that's designed to facilitate the most reckless speculative enrichment schemes in the trillions of dollars with this handful of pirates, this gang of criminal oligarchs, this kleptocracy that presides over this sick capitalist system that pauperizes the world's peoples, that is addicted to permanent war into arms, that wages class war upon the population of the United States every moment of the waking day. They are covering their tracks while they simply steal us blind. When increased defaults crush mortgage-linked securities, when credit markets and firms are sideswiped, they bail it out with public taxpayers' money. Maya?
Ralph, what was happening recently with Bear Stearns and with the other banks, because you have to remember all the major banks were writing down losses, over $100 billion of losses as of December of 2007, and probably a lot more now. What you have to remember is that what essentially was taking place is similar to 1929. They created these instruments with just a small asset base and were borrowing money. It was, again, buying on margin. So when the value fell and the banks were saying, uh-oh, there isn't enough collateral to cover what your loan is, they were then having to borrow more money. And then finally, the banks turned around and said, hey, we don't want to lend you any more money. So that's what happened to Bear Stearns, and that's what's happening to all these financial companies. And so then the Federal Reserve stepped in, as it did. The New York Fed stepped in with long-term capital, and as the government stepped in with Continental Bank some years ago, they stepped in and are providing the money or arranging for J.P. Morgan Chase to take over Bear Stearns and itself provide the funds and also the Fed backing it up. But J.P. Morgan Chase ran into a little snag in that the Bear Stearns is primarily owned by its own employees, and they didn't want to sell. They didn't want to lose their entire life's work and investments. And so they weren't willing to accept $2 a share. And consequently, during the last week, J.P. Morgan Chase went in to renegotiate and is offering $10 a share. It's not clear whether the Federal Reserve will accept that part of the bargain, and the story is still to be continued.
14,000 employees at Bear Stearns are going to be losing their life savings. They had owned actually one-third of the stock, and they were beneficiaries in huge ways, and now they're losing everything, and they're being basically given like a $2 a share for something. There are hundreds of millions of dollars are being lost for these people. I mean, they were...
It was worth $170 last year.
And now $2. But look at what is going on here, brothers and sisters, as the monster... who created the monster article stipulates. You see, they're all rolling their eyes to heaven and say, gee, we didn't know this was coming. How could you have anticipated this? Well, look at what was going on behind the scenes. Quote, when increased defaults and subprime mortgages began crushing mortgage-linked securities last summer, credit markets and firms that play substantial roles in these markets were sideswiped. Two large Bear Stearns hedge funds collapsed. The losses were amplified by huge dollops of borrowed money trying to juice the returns. All around Wall Street, the dealers were having trouble now moving the exotic securities, particularly collateralized debt obligations. Within days, the once booming inactive-linked CDO market, which in 3 years had seen issues triple in size, ground to a halt. Jeremy Grantham, chairman and chief investment strategist at GMO, the Boston investment firm, said, we had the shot across our bow, and we realized something was going wrong. Treat it as a dress rehearsal. Stress test your portfolios, because next time the shot won't just be across the bow. It'll be a direct hit. Each time the near miss brought a growing fears that the stakes were growing larger, the risks more dangerous. Wall Street banks and banks abroad took billions of dollars in write-downs. The chiefs of Union Bank Suisse, Merrill Lynch and Citigroup were all ousted because of these huge losses. Quote, it was like watching a slow-motion train wreck. After all the write-downs at the banks in June and July and August, we were in full-fledged credit crisis with the CEOs of the top banks running around like headless chickens and the U.S. equity markets peak. What kind of denial were they in? Brothers and sisters, they knew. They were panicking. They didn't have a handle on it because they were all the endlessly greedy beneficiaries of this fake house of cards. And now it's collapsing around their ears while they're pretending it's not happening. And then they seek public money to bail themselves out. And that ain't going to work. The crisis is deep. It's systemic. And we are only at the beginning of it.
This is Taking Aim with
Ralph Schoenman
and Maya Schoen. Our program today, The Collapse of Bear Stearns and the Crisis of Fictive Capital, Part 2, The Specter of Systemic Collapse, will be on our website, www.takingaimradio.com, and on the WBAI archive at www.wbai.org. This program was recorded March 25th, 2008. We'll be with you next week. Piki piki no bini ai, nuna ramatu de kei na wado wow. Piki piki no bini ai, ta ta ta.